Hey everybody, today we're talking about Fast and the Furious, and so I just wanted to make it clear that although I sound like a huge wuss who is afraid of going fast on this episode, that since then I have been trained, I went to different classes that they told me to take, and now I not only go really, really fast all the time and I drag race and have multiple championships, but I own race cars too. I have an F140 Lombardi Ferrari Niner, and I take that all the on the PCH, and I go up to 200 miles per hour and I clock in, you know, 0 to 60 at 2.3 gigaseconds. So it's like, it's boring for me now. This is like all that I do, and I'm just fixing up cars all the time. So I also have a shop, so please take your car or bike down to my shop. It's called Ethan's Smoke Zone, and that's in reference to like leaving people in the dust, you know, or like the smoke that comes out of the back of the car. It's not a place for weed. I get that all the time. And that was my mistake naming it Smoke Zone, but I already filed the LLC and I put a big sign up there. So anyway, come to Ethan's Smoke Zone. I'll like totally custom mod, NAS your car and nitrous and the whole thing. And there'll be fire and flames, and your car will go up to 500 miles an hour. And that's a guarantee. Ethan's Smoke Zone guarantee. Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Science, or will we have to fight? Bad science. Hi everybody, welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today we are talking about Fast and Furious. Not the Fast and the Furious, but the fourth installment in this series, franchise saga, Fast and Furious, and I am joined by two titans of the industry. One is a stand-up comedian, an actor, and a host of the podcast Who's Paying Attention? He's a national treasure, he's a car and motorcycle enthusiast as well. It's Alonzo Bowden.
I'm a titan and a national treasure.
I really
and yet somehow broke. Somehow not rich. You would think Titan and National Treasure.
Is your hoodie made of velvet?
Absolutely.
I mean, so
you're spending it all on the hoodies and like bikes, I assume.
His hoodie's velvet. My hoodie's Lululemon. So we can...
Well, that's you paid more. Lululemon costs more than Nike velvet. Introduce my fellow Titan.
Okay, right away, Alonzo. Your co-host here, because I assume this is just your guys' podcast now, is an automotive journalist, an actor, and host of the Smoking Tire podcast and YouTube series, Matt Farah.
Thanks. I'm not sure I've ever acted, but I've definitely played myself on TV.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, the internet says you're an actor, and I wanted to respect
that. I've occasionally acted as if I wasn't completely appalled by a vehicle.
That's how he keeps the testing gig.
Yeah.
So to make things super clear for our audience here, you guys are car guys. You guys are motorcycle guys. I am not. So I am going to be learning today. I'm going to be asking questions. And first off, we spoke about it very briefly before we started. What'd you guys ride in on?
I rode in on Ducati Diavel, which is Ducati's. They called it a cruiser initially. Then they said no, it's not
they
a cruiser.
They walked back the cruiser
right
thing.
If you know anything about motorcycles, it's what we call a naked bike.
Why is it a naked bike? What does that mean?
Because it doesn't have any fairings. It's not fairings are the aerodynamic covers that are on race bikes.
Okay.
It doesn't have any of that. Naked means you can see the engine, you can see the suspension, everything is...
It's a very good looking.
The mechanicals are visible. Well, it's still a Ducati, so it has to be styled beautifully. It is the Ducati for old knees. Ducati makes...
What do you got for a herniated disc?
Yeah, Ducati is known for... You know, Ducati is the Ferrari of motorcycles, right?
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it.
Fantastic Italian race bikes, but then they realized that their customer base and the world was motorcycle world was getting older, and you get to a point where like, no, I can't fold up on a sport bike anymore, but I still want something stylish and fast.
Yeah.
When they first built this bike in 2011, my Ducati dealer who I've known forever, he said, listen, I'm ordering one of these. He said, I don't know what it is. I don't know if anybody's going to like it. I'm ordering it. And then he said, come ride this thing. He said, it's amazing. He said, it looks weird. You don't know what it is, but it's amazing. And he was right. So I rode it. That was the first one I got years ago. So I just bought this one last year.
Wow.
So I'm on the duck today.
Okay.
They're pretty awesome bikes. They're pretty bananas.
Yeah. I assume good. It can also go exceedingly fast if it's still a racing bike.
I can break the speed limit.
in first gear.
Say I can break the speed limit. No, it's fast, but it's not... This is the thing with riding motorcycles. Is the older you get, you kind of, I'm not going to say you slow down. You get smarter about going fast and when to go fast.
What does that mean to be smarter when you're going
fast? It means that in your 20s, you just want to see how fast you can go, and you have a replica race bike, and you're flying around town and zooming. Then as you get older, you're like, okay, you might go to the racetrack. I have friends who go to the track all the time where it's safer to go fast, or you just ride fast when opportunity knocks. You don't try to ride fast, you know. You don't do 80 miles an hour splitting lanes on a freeway. You wait till the freeway's emptier, and then you do 80 plus. And there are a lot of back roads, you know. So So you just become smarter about it. Also, you don't heal as fast. So you're like, you might want to slow down.
Is this worth 8 weeks?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's good to know that you're riding safe.
We have some of the best roads in the world here. So you can pick and choose your time and place to enjoy them.
Oh, okay. Know? And you rode in on a...
Well, I'm like Alonzo. I'm a fan of the Italian two-wheeled vehicles. I rode a Vespa.
Okay.
It's a 300, so it's the fast one. Okay. I just got it. I love scooters. I'm a diehard scooter. I love bikes like he does too, but I'm afraid of fast bikes.
Yeah.
I'm very comfortable in a fast car. I'm not comfortable in a fast bike. That math he's talking about injuries, that's me constantly. But I have a lot of experience in the same way like a cab driver has a lot of experience. So like urban motorcycling is like the only way I stay sane. So my scooter... Like, I got to run around all town all the time, like he does. And, like, doing that on two wheels is the only way I can be on time to stuff. I cannot want to blow my brains out from sitting in traffic.
Right.
You know, I park right up front. Like, oh, it's the best. And all those, like, feelings of motorcycling, I get those, the fun feelings, at much lower speeds. Like, I don't need to be pushing the bike to get to have that fun.
Right.
So, you know, it's the equivalent of, like, a car thing. Like, oh, I can have fun in a little hatchback. I don't need a 600 horsepower, you know, Ferrari. Where me, car, yes, I need the 600 horsepower.
Okay. So that's when you're putting pedals to the metal.
For cars, you know, but not for bikes. I'm still
he's a car guy who rides. I'm a bike guy who drives.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have the yin and the yang here today.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Definitely. I have such little experience riding motorcycles. I rode on the back of my friend's motorcycle.
Don't ever say that again.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Very cool.
These are things we don't tell
his
people.
His dad was a bike guy.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. The only time... We talked about this. It's a very specific time you're allowed to ride on the back of another man's motorcycle.
Okay.
You were riding together, your bike broke down, you have to get home. That's
that
it.
Was
That's
not the case.
Only, that is the only time that is acceptable.
I'll add an asterisk. I did it for a television bit as a goof.
And I
with
did
a MotoGP rider, and I about crap my pants.
Yeah, that's a whole another thing. Which
on a road, on Tuna Canyon. It was death.
I did it as a joke, like we were entering a place, you know, and it was funny for the little guy to be riding the big guy on the back of the bike, but we were getting paid for a TV show.
Yeah, although, yeah.
Don't ever.
Listen,
it didn't happen, and just...
It's not surprising.
Can you edit out him saying that?
Leave it in. I am honored to be unaccepted in the hands of both of you. For me, I had never been on a bike before. He had this like really fast bike, my friend's dad. And so he told me, hey, why don't you get on? I'll show you. And I said, no, I'm too scared. I was finally convinced. I hopped on. He said, let's do a boost. I didn't know what that meant. He got up to I don't know how fast, and I feared
for
my life.
Let's do a boost?
He said, let's do a boost. He was a weird guy.
I don't even know what a boost is.
Is that a pole? Is that
maybe he just watched Fast and Furious. I'm not sure.
Maybe it had a turbo on it.
I will. I also want to pitch to you my other experience riding was in Italy, and I wanted to get a scooter to go around town.
Yeah.
And so the first thing they ask is, do you have scooter experience? And I panicked. I thought, if I say no, he won't give me the scooter. So I said yes. Gave me the scooter. I took off from there, turned a corner, crashed into an Italian restaurant.
I mean, they will give you the scooter always. They'll just give you instructions if you say no.
Right.
I didn't know what to do.
If you give them money, they'll give you a scooter. That's the business that they're in.
I freaked out, man. I just thought like, oh, I have to act the part here.
I have to tell you my favorite memory with that. So it was a cruise gig, and you know, right at the end of the dock is a scooter rental place, right? So this guy rents a scooter. And as he pulls out of the driveway, he crashes. And his wife is standing there. I told you not to get that scooter. You don't know what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. So that everybody on the ship just walking by while he's laying on the ground with his wife yelling at him. It was like the worst
thing. Like 10 feet from the rental sign?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, And every guy is like, man, we know what he wants to say right now, and there's nothing he can say. The thing is, everyone sees you because you're just laying in the street, and your wife, no sympathy. I told you not to get that thing. You don't know what you're doing. Blah, 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 blah. Oh,
yeah, that's hilarious. Her moment. That's validation
it
right
was
there.
Hilarious.
Oh, that's great. Awesome. Okay, so Fast and Furious. I have not seen all of the Fast and Furious movies. Are you guys into, you know, have you seen the whole franchise? Are you huge fans?
I've seen them all.
Seen them all.
I've seen them all. 6, 7, and 8 I only saw once. But yeah,
I was going to say, I'm not going to lie to you. I've tried on 3 different occasions to get through Hobbs and Shaw. I simply can't get through. It's so bad.
I wanted to see that. I still haven't seen that one.
I couldn't make it through.
Three separate aircraft, 3 separate falling
asleep.
That's
exactly.
Pretty much where I'm at, too.
Yeah.
It seems like it'd be so exciting.
I tried on a 777. I tried on a 787.
You know, they started out a lot of fun, and they were very cool. We were talking about this before we started. When the cars started flying, that's when they lost me.
Right.
The first time I saw a car fly from one tower to another in Dubai, I was like,
I don't know.
All right, from now on, I'm going to have to let it go. But the first few movies were fun. They were great, and, you know, and we talked about this, Matt.
Yeah, I still watch the first one at least once a year.
Nice. They don't need a script. It was like, all right, here, listen, we got cars, we got women.
Yep.
Go.
Yeah,
and that was the movie. And
get
it was
a graphics
fun.
Guy and a neon guy together. Let's make this.
Yeah,
let's make
I feel like this one then is probably the perfect one to discuss and get into because it was. I think I have again haven't seen them all, but I think this was like the last of the regular car Fast and Furious movies. I think after this, they kind of got into flying cars, jets, helicopters.
It became bank heist after this, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. So I found it very enjoyable. I like the movie a lot, and I have so many questions about just like random. There was like car jargon I didn't get. I did write down at one point, like, what is the deal with underground street racing? Like, it seems like this huge, almost like a celebrity event. There's people with tons of money everywhere. All these cars look like they're $1 million. I just didn't. When I think underground street racing, to me, it's just like 4 guys, maybe like 2-3 cars.
And underground street racing is not cheap, but it's pretty grimy.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a pretty grimy enterprise. There's no soundtrack to it other than like...
there's a gray area then,
right.
I guess.
But there is a lot of cash. There's a lot of betting. They bet their cars and they bet a lot of cash. And they do, you're right. They put a lot of money into hot rodding their cars. Like I know, not so much now, but I used to know some of the kids who did that, right, who had the like, you know, 300, 400, 500 horsepower Hondas and so on. And I'd be like, well, you know, you could have just bought a Porsche.
But they can win money with
but
that
But I
Honda.
Get it. Like, because, you know, because if you're a car guy, right, part of the fun, or a girl, because there's women into it too, but part of the fun is building your car versus just going to buy a super fast car. You get a car. And at this point, they were like into these Japanese cars, right? And they were just hot riding the hell out of these Japanese cars, as opposed to when I was coming up, it was old American muscle cars, right? Which became super expensive and collector. So they had these beat up Hondas and Nissans and Toyotas, and they would
just for
grab
the style of it. Is that why? Because
were cheap, plentiful, and reliable, so you could put stuff on them and then still drive them every day. You know, you couldn't even in like 2000, you couldn't really drive like a 65 GTO like every day. You know what I mean? It's a weekend hot rod. It was old and clunky.
Right.
This Honda Civic, you could work on it on the weekends. You could then drive it throughout the week, and it would probably work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it just sort of became.
Did you guys ever have these mod cars?
And they were the cars. They were the cars that they grew up with, right?
Yeah.
Like every generation has cars they grew up with, you know, and these were the cars that this generation grew up with. So that was what they hot rodded. That's what they had around.
Yeah, yeah.
I've had a couple of. Little cars like that. Actually, my first sports car was a Mazda RX-7, which was a lot of fun. And I had a really crappy Supra, not one of the good ones. And I've had a couple of Honda Civics. And, you know, probably one of the most fun little cars I had was a Mini Cooper S.
They're great. I had one of them, too.
Yeah.
But
wait,
when you say you've had because I've had a Honda Civic before as well, but mine was like the regular standard Honda Civic. Is that what you had also? Or you're saying you would like hot rod these
cars? No, I had a regular Honda Civic. It was the SI. So
SIs
it was
were
the
cool,
sporty,
though.
It was the sporty level of Civic, and it had a 6-speed manual, and you just drove the hell out of it. And but I also had a CRX that was a blast. And the thing is, because they were Hondas, they don't break. Mm-hmm. Like, you just drive the hell out of it. You're flooring it all the time, and it they just run. Hondas are, the reliability of Hondas is incredible.
Yeah. Okay. I've modified basically every car I've ever had.
Wow.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I have. I mean, it was sometimes I modify them a lot, and sometimes I modify them just a little bit. But is I can't think of any car I've ever owned that I haven't modified in some way.
Okay, and is and it so, usually, typically the engine you're
It depends
modifying?
On the car. Sometimes okay. the car, it's it for me, it's personally, it's like, what do I think this car needs? Sometimes the car needs the handling adjusted. Sometimes the car needs more power. Sometimes it doesn't sound quite right, so you get a different exhaust, you change the sound. Hmm. You know, sometimes this thing is black and I really want it to be the color of the rest of the car. You know, it's any it could be anything because different cars serve, you know, different needs.
Okay.
But like right now I have like a 1987 Porsche, like 911, like cool classic, but it's a 4-inch lift with big off-road tires and rally lights and like full under tray skid. It's literally an off-road Porsche 911.
Sounds crazy.
Yeah. And so that, you know, that's for driving in the city, basically for dealing with potholes and speed bumps and stuff like that. So I just smash that stuff. But okay. at the time, the Japanese stuff was super on trend.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. And racing? Have you guys raced? This movie's all about racing.
I haven't raced, like, as far as going to an underground street race and racing. I mean, I've gotten into it with people on the freeway and just playing around. But, no, I haven't gotten to the – and actually, when I first moved to L.A., this was back in 1980, I had a 67 Camaro. I did got into a few street races with that. That was about it.
When you say got into a few street races, do you mean, like, you were, like, on the freeway somebody's –
No, it was actually guys at work. You know, it was almost like the, nice. You know, we're going to fight after school. It was like, yeah, man, let's meet on this. There was a road out by the airport, and it was like, yeah, let's go out there.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, this is by Burbank Airport area. And we were
there's
like,
multiple
there's
ones.
There's one like, by LAX, too.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
We were like, let's go see.
You know? Dude, I did it. I had a Mustang in high school that me and my friends modified. We literally took the whole engine apart and put it back, and it was a whole thing. And I went to one of these organized street races as a high school student with this Mustang.
Damn.
It's the one and only time I've ever street raced.
What were the rules here? Are we talking pink slips? What are we talking
about?
No,
it was for money. It was money. It was a couple hundred dollars.
Okay.
And I lined up next to a very stock-looking Mitsubishi Eclipse. And this is where Alonzo goes, well, I see where this
is
going.
Yeah, I know how this ends.
Because the Mitsubishi Eclipse, there was a version called a GSX that was a homologation car that had a turbo and all-wheel drive. And street racing is about building something called a sleeper.
A sleeper.
Which is a car that goes way faster than it looks like it goes. You debadge it. You put the basic wheels on it. You make it look beat up.
You want to shark somebody.
And then it's like, you know, 900 horsepower. So I lined up with my Mustang against this Eclipse that sounded kind of normal. And then it was like flags up. And this thing was like, you
that
know.
That was the last he saw of the Eclipse.
That was the last I saw the Eclipse. And that was the last I saw my money. And it was the last time I ever lined up in a street race.
Wow. Crazy.
But yeah, no, it happens. And then they have these sort of, the new kind of thing became the long distance kind of endurance street racing, which you probably heard of, something called Gumball.
No, I don't know about Gumball
3000. It's sort of like, it's a rally, not a race. It's like a long distance party on wheels.
Okay. It's a race cross country.
But they basically race Sounds each weak. Other from city to city. Yeah. It's madness. I don't really recommend it, but it's, you know, it's a lifestyle kind
the
of
thing. About, okay. The thing about street racing and why they try to discourage it, because it really is dangerous. It's really dangerous in the sense of there's no safety equipment, there's no barriers. The car crashes into people or the driver can't drive. And now now it's harder to do, but the thing to do is go to a drag strip. And like they have nights where you can just drag race, like whatever you bring, you can race. And that is a smarter, safer way.
Yeah.
If me and Matt wanted to race, that's how we would do it.
Yeah.
We'd meet at a speedway, and
we are going to do this.
Go against
right?
each other.
You guys are going to race after the show.
I'm going to track next Thursday if you want to come.
Okay, so next Thursday,
I'll be at Auto
I'm
Club.
I'm going to smoke that scooter at his.
we'll see.
I took a scooter, you know, remember them Piaggio 3-wheel scooters? I took one of those down the Quarter Mile once.
There's a guy like who a does, he has this crazy racing scooter. It's like a 9 second quarter mile scooter.
Whoa.
And he's just what Matt says. He shows up on a scooter and people are like, oh, get the hell out of here. Takes all their money, smokes them.
Yeah, there was a scene, piggybacking on what you said, where they are racing and Paul Walker's character is just so close to hitting people. It's madness. He's like beeping, but he's also going really fast. So it's like, I don't know how much time they have to move, but yet everybody moves out of the way. But that was one of the main things I was thinking throughout that entire sequence was like, how is no one being killed here?
Intentionally. If it was, a director made a decision to almost kill all those people.
Right. Yeah.
It was just movies, they just start killing them.
Yeah, they were background actors who had no idea what they signed up for. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. So how did you were saying that you got into it in high school. Maybe it was before that, I don't know. What did you, like, did your dad or uncle, did somebody
get into cars?
Yeah, yeah.
I was addicted to cars from when I was a very little kid. I started with magazines and then Nintendo games and then a go-kart and then, you know, eventually a real car. And
disassembling stuff, fixing it.
I'm not that much of a wrench. I'm a pretty terrible wrench. Me and my friends did work on my Mustang, but I didn't actually enjoy that part of it. I'm a driver.
Okay, so it was
it was all about driving.
A kid with magazines, video games, just like this is
up until I could drive. Once I had a license and a car, all I wanted to do was just to be driving.
Wow.
I thought every time I got in the car, I legitimately was like, this is practice. I'm practicing right now.
Wow, yeah.
Practicing for what? Like, I don't know, but like pretty decent at driving now, so yeah, I guess that.
Alonzo, what got you into it?
Well, I'm a little older than Matt, so I didn't have the video game.
When the automobile was invented.
That's right.
I turned 30.
Them Model Ts.
Were neighbors with Henry Ford, I believe.
No, it was a different thing. So it was the same thing, but just in a different era, right? So as a little kid, it was Hot Wheel cars, and then we moved up to, they used to call them Aurora cars. They were these electric little race cars, and we all had
slot cars.
Smaller scale slot cars that you had sets at home, and we used to race those. And you know, car people and bike people. Well, I know how I fell in love with motorcycles, but when it comes to cars, it's just something in us. So when you're a kid, you start noticing cars and you start reading car magazines, and you're like, wow, this is really cool. Like when I moved to LA, like, I had to see Van Nuys Boulevard. I had to see Mulholland Drive because I had read about these places and they were like mythical to me. And it was like, I got to see it. Where is this? You know? And then you see it and you're like, wow, this is so cool. And it was when they used to cruise on Wednesdays on Van Nuys and they had speed shops up there and you would just see all this crazy stuff. And I was like right at home as soon as I saw it. I was like, this is so cool to live it, because as a kid I just wanted to, you know.
Yeah. What got you into motorcycles?
My grandmother had a farm in South Carolina, and there was a dirt road that, you know, a few miles. It went from the house out to the highway, right? And there were people who rented land from her, and their kid had a bike. It had to be either Norton or a Triumph, because it was in the late 60s. It was a British bike. And he would put us on the back and just take us for rides up and down this dirt road. And I tell people, I was 7 years old, it still feels that way when I get on a bike. It was like I was flying or so. I don't know what that feeling was, but I fell in love with motorcycles the first time he did that. And I absolutely love them the same way today. That's never gone away. It's never not been fun to get on a motorcycle. Like Matt was talking about, like getting around L.A., to me, like, aren't you scared? I'm like, no, it's a giant game of Frogger.
Yeah, seriously. If you enjoy driving or riding or whatever, and you treat motorcycling in the city as an active thing I'm doing, like, this is what I'm doing right now. Nothing else, no work, like this. You're so much more aware than everyone in a car. And you use that to your advantage. You're gone before they even see you.
Yeah, the anticipation, you know when someone's going to change lanes without looking. You, like now, the whole thing is distracted driving. And if you're on a bike, for one thing, there's more room around you than people think. Like when people are in a car, they're like, how did he go between that? There's usually more room than you think.
Yeah.
But you can tell if someone's texting.
Right.
You can tell when they're on the phone because you see the car move this little bit.
Yeah.
You know, just be aware of that.
So I can't fathom getting on the bike because of what you were talking about, splitting in between cars, going fast on the highway. It scares the crap out of me because I assume if I crash, I'm going to get fucked up. you were in a crash. You did get slightly fucked up from what I was reading, but you told me not to trust Wikipedia. So if you don't mind me asking, what happened?
Shit's editable.
What was the healing?
So this was fantastic. So like I said, we go to racetracks, and I haven't done it in a while. But if you want to go fast, you go to a track.
Right.
Because when you're on a track, like they say, everyone's going in the same direction. You pretty much know what you're doing, and the people around you know what you're doing. So I was at a track called Button Willow, a small track up in, Bakersfield, just north of Bakersfield. I was coming out of a turn, and I gave it too much gas, and I did what's called high siding. What that means is the back of the bike starts to skid, then it gains traction, and when it gains traction, it launches you in the air.
Whoa.
So you high side, so you're like in
a springboard. Yay!
Right.
Doesn't sound fun.
So
how much time, what do you think about when you're flying through
the air? You think it's going to hurt. Honestly, time slows down, and you're like, man, this is going to hurt.
Wow.
So so I broke my wrist, but the funny thing about it, and this is not, it was somewhat unusual, but it happens. That I'll just put it that way, it happened. Somebody got on Wikipedia and had me as a motorcycle racer racing Ducatis. Mm. Blah. It's very flattering.
Yes.
The description, I was like, wow, I am very impressed. And the funny thing about it is motorcycle racers are like jockeys. They are literally half my size. They are small men who weigh 100 to 120 pounds for the simple reason in racing, lightweight goes faster.
Right.
They don't want a 250-pound motorcycle racer. That doesn't exist. So it was so funny reading this. I don't know who writes stuff on Wikipedia.
People who don't know cars think that if you go to a track day, you're racing.
Right.
That's pretty much what that means.
You're just practicing going fast under controlled conditions.
Yeah.
So that was the crash. And this is what was funny. This is what it led to. So I had a Ducati 1098, right? Full sport bike Ducati. A friend of mine's custom bike builder, as any motorcycle friend ass after a crash, how's the bike? That's the first question. How's the bike? And I said, man, it's good. It's, the plastic's cracked. I'm thinking about making a naked bike. He said, send it to me. I want it. I sent it to him. He's a friend in Florida. He built the most beautiful custom bike. Like, this bike was featured in magazines and bike shows. And people would ask, like, man, you own the Ducati. Like, people knew the bike. The bike became far more famous than me. It was really funny. But I was like, yeah, I'm okay. He's like, you'll heal. I want the bike.
Is everything on the bike fine?
Numbers matching? Send
bike,
it.
Bike runs? All right. Give me the bike.
Have you been in any spills?
On a motorcycle? I dropped a bike I think it was the second or third day I had my license. I learned to not ever lane split between traffic and the row of parked cars. Somebody opened a door on me, and I dropped an Aprilia Press Motors. Like, when I first, they really want to get new people into motorcycling. So if you write about cars for a living and you go, hey, I want to start doing bikes, they'll be like, come on down. And so they'll lend you all the motorcycles in the world. So I took my test on a borrowed bike, and I'm out riding this Aprilia, which is like a big, it's an Italian bike. It's pretty expensive for like having a license for two days.
If Ducati is Ferrari, Aprilia is Lamborghini.
Yeah, okay. Basically.
Got it.
And I dropped the bike at 5 miles an hour, and I bumped my shoulder and felt kind of dumb and scratched the bike a little bit and, knock wood. Thankfully, that's the only incident I've had.
Okay, that's good to know. I'm glad you guys have all your parts.
Well, now they have suits that have airbags built in.
Yeah, really? It's pretty cool. Yeah.
You can get a racing suit, and now you can even get street jackets that have an airbag built in.
Oh.
Some of the most common injuries on a bike, one of the common ones is breaking your collarbone.
Damn.
So they have the airbag. It would actually protect you. It protects, obviously, your chest, your back, all internal
Remember
organs.
Tommy Boy when he pulls the thing on the plane?
Yeah, yeah.
That.
Oh, okay. In the jacket.
Yeah.
In the jacket.
Cool.
Yeah. The computers, the algorithms. There's a company called Alpine Stars that makes a lot of this stuff. And I was in Europe, and they invited me to see how they do this. And it's fascinating because the computer can tell by the speed you're going whether you're leaning or crashing. What I mean? Like, it could tell by the speed and the angle you're moving, this is a crash, or this is just because racers ride at unbelievable lean angles, but it can tell, like, no, this is not leaning.
You're not leaning. You're actually flying through the air.
You're flying through the air. So I'm gonna inflate and protect you from this impact.
I've driven some cars that were modified to such a crazy degree that when you would launch them, you know, from a 0 to 60 launch, the computer, like you know, there's something called like OnStar on GM. They like calls, yeah, right? And you'd launch the car so hard, and the G-force meter would be so hard that it would think you just had a crash.
That was like those Hennessy 1,000 horsepower Cadillacs, right?
Well, it's funny. I was just talking about that because we were talking about sleepers before. I just spent the last week driving a Hennessy Jeep Grand Cherokee. Silver, stock wheels.
Tell him about Hennessy.
1,000 horsepower.
Tell him about Hennessy
Jeep?
Because yeah. Hennessy is a specific company that does something. So
they're
I'll
in
let
Texas,
Matt explain
and
it.
they just put all the horsepower at everything. So they get brand new cars from the dealers that are already pretty fast, and they make them just obscene. And it's the most Texas thing ever because they just are straight line highway kind of missiles, right? It's a yeehaw, gung ho kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And so they sent me this Jeep, and it was just a silver Jeep with regular wheels, had no badges on it. They took all the badges off it, and it has a 1,000 horsepower engine. It does 0 to 60 in 2.6 seconds and runs a 10.2 quarter mile. It weighs 5,300 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, it's a Jeep. And so then my wife drove it to the grocery store. It's cool.
To give you an idea of so Cadillac made a car called the CTS-V. And basically what they did was they took the Corvette drivetrain, right? Because it's all GM.
Okay.
They said, let's put the Corvette engine and transmission in a Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll build a 500 horsepower Cadillac. And then Hennessy said, well, why stop there?
Yeah.
And then they made it into a 1,000 horsepower Cadillac. But it still looked the same. There's some subtle differences that if you're a car person, you would know.
Yeah.
But they stopped at 1,200 eventually.
Right.
They did go to 1,200.
And
madness.
It is madness. The thing about it, though, now, because of the electronics and computers, and this is like he's got a Porsche, and Porsche is, I think, the best company at doing this. So you can get a Porsche Turbo that has close to 600 horsepower and drive it around like a Camry. Just safe, slow, this or that.
Wow.
And then stomp on it and be launched into the next dimension.
Okay.
And it's because now, in the old days, you kind of tuned a car for one or the other. It was either going to run on the street or it had to be full throttle, and like it'd be like the car be bucking and slow and this and that. Then you'd open the throttle and it would all smooth out. Well, now the fuel controls, the electronic controls, etc., the car can adjust to that. So it runs smoother. We're in the golden age of cars. The technology has made a ridiculous amount of horsepower drivable.
Yeah. So I drove something called a McLaren 720S recently that makes just about 800 horsepower and will get 28 miles per gallon on the highway.
Wow. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
So do you have to be aware of that, you know, because it's such a fine-tuned machine?
You don't have to do anything.
You just
hit the button and put it in D and drive.
What you have to be aware of is what that power means and what it could do. So Matt's an expert driver. So if you give Matt a car that makes 600, 700, 800 horsepower, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people, they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
So now they have this car and they're like, oh my God. Well, what happens is it scares the hell out of you. Like you don't know what it's like to do, you know, 0 to 100 in the normal time you're accelerating on a freeway off ramp. Now you're hitting the freeway, you're doing 120. And they get scared. And like with motorcycles where the power to weight ratio is unbelievable. So you can have a bike that has 160 or 180 horsepower and it weighs 450 pounds. So it's a bullet. And there was one that came out. It was called the Yamaha R1, super fast race bike. And my friend who was a dealer, he said, yeah, they have a lot of the back halves of R1s available.
Oh,
here's
no.
where you see this
because
in cars.
People would literally ram the throttle open and just ram into whatever was in front of them because they had no comprehension of how quick and how fast this is. So when you say, can you do it? You can do it, but you still need to know what you're doing. Like, you know, you don't want to give like these cars to a 16-year-old kid as his first car.
Right.
Or
I mean,
or
I wouldn't know what I was
like
doing.
That, right.
Here's where you see it now the most, Teslas.
Okay.
Because a lot of people go from a Prius to a Tesla
right.
or a diesel to a Tesla or some other kind of economy car, hybrid, whatever, to a Tesla.
Yeah.
And so they go from something that's 125 horsepower, a little hybrid, to Tesla 100D is like 650 horsepower. So they just, and by the way, they have a giant iPad right in front of them.
Yeah, that doesn't look very helpful.
People that have alternate agendas have convinced them that these things can drive themselves, but they most certainly cannot.
Okay.
And you end up with a lot of front end damage.
Damn.
People just drive them into stuff.
Because one of the things about learning to drive, and especially learning to ride, is learning to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, learning to really use the brakes. Like people, like when you get in a car with a race driver and they show you what the car can really do, the extreme of the car performance, what I find people are always amazed at is how late they and how hard they hit the brakes. Mm-hmm. They're going into a turn and you're like, okay, we should be slowing down now. Shouldn't we be slowing down? And then at the last moment, they hit the brakes and you feel that seatbelt pull because they are, and that's how they drive. It's extremes. But you have to learn, like if you do a high performance driving class, I've done a few, they teach you about braking.
Yeah.
Learn to stop. Anyone can stomp on the gas and go. You need to learn to stop and you need to not panic.
Yeah, there should be classes or warnings or something with these cars because that makes total, what you're saying makes total sense.
Every crazy fast car I drive now in the last year and all the fastest stuff is ridiculous. I just go, I get out of it and I go, I cannot believe that they just let regular people buy this stuff.
Right,
it's just seems dangerous. So insanely fast.
And they do have classes, but you have to take it. Like
you have to decide that you want to take it.
I did
yourself.
One with BMW. I have an M3 and BMW has a whole performance driving thing. I sent my brother to it and he just absolutely loved it because he hadn't driven like that before and he was just like, wow.
They should throw it in as an option when you're buying the car.
You know what? They do. A lot of them offer it as an option.
Oh,
what
good.
They don't do is really warn people.
Push it on
you. Really need this because
right.
Most people are just not, they have no idea the capability of some of these cars.
That's crazy. Yeah. Well, so I was thinking about it when you were talking about getting in a car with a race car driver. They in all of these movies, there's drifting.
Yeah.
And it seems like because they'll do it a few times in a race and then keep going. And I was thinking to myself, like, wouldn't that wear on the tires? Wouldn't that somehow?
Yeah, but most importantly, if you're racing, drifting is what you do when you want to look good on camera. It's not what you do when you want to win a race.
Right, unless it's a drift race.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
Drift race. Yes, Formula Drift is drift racing.
Got it. Okay.
That's a real sport, but typically if you're actually having a race,
you're not going to be drifting around.
Probably not. It's not the fastest way.
And yeah, you go through tires. You know, the thing about that, the thing about tires, it's brakes and all that. If you're a car nut, that's just part of doing business. Like you know what I mean? Like you're like I remember a motorcycle racer said, he said, if you ever crash because of your tires, it's your fault.
That's true.
Like you spend the money on good tires, and when they're worn, you get rid of them and get new ones. You don't try to save money on tires. And you know that this is your hobby. This is the game you're playing. Yeah. So it costs this much money to do it. Nobody makes a profit playing with cars. It's not a profitable
it's not a gamble.
Business. It is a fun business that costs you money.
Yeah. Is this where we do the PSA that Paul died because of old tires? That's where Paul and Roger died because they took a quick spin in a car that had old tires. They were dry rotted and had no grip. And they went around a corner at a speed that would have been... Yeah, if it's illegal, fine. Immoral, no. You could have taken that corner at that speed in a Prius and been fine. But they were on decade-old tires.
Damn.
And rubber, the way you go through rubber is you can either wear it through by drifting or just by driving your car, or it ages and dry rots, especially in California.
Right.
And so if you have a car that has old tires, not just worn tires, old tires are almost worse than worn tires, actually. They are worse than worn tires.
Because the tread looks okay. But if you've seen this where you see the sidewalls have the little cracks in it.
Yeah.
And that's just age. That's just
pure
rubber
age.
Gets old and it hardens. It loses its elasticity.
Wow.
And
okay, so if you're listening and you have old tires, but get them switched up.
Yeah, but as regards the movie, it's going through a set of tires in a movie race is not like going through an unlimited magazine in a movie gunfight.
Okay.
The tires probably would last the race.
Got it.
Whereas you don't have 47 bullets in your Glock, I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. What about the nitro?
Yes, you do.
Oh.
You mean you don't?
Oh, unless you have that
and
awesome...
Can I see your Glock?
And if you're a bad guy... You can't hit anything.
Yeah. You didn't go to school for that.
You just can't hit anything. If you're a bad
and you
guy,
you can definitely
if you're a good
hide
guy,
behind doors of cars. They're definitely bulletproof.
If you're a good guy, you actually only need three bullets because yeah. you never miss.
There's a part in this movie, there's a shootout where it's just Vin Diesel and Paul Walker against like nine guys.
Yeah.
And they all have guns and they didn't bring any guns.
Yeah.
And right. somehow that works out
when
for them.
When did the street racers get military weapons training?
Like, I don't know. They didn't. I have a quick quiz for you guys. I was thinking about Vin Diesel and how funny it was that his last name is Diesel and he's in all these car movies. And I was like, is that his real name? Do you guys know if it's his real name or not?
I could almost guarantee you it's not.
I have no idea.
It is not his real name. Yeah. His real name? Anybody?
Vincent something.
It's Mark Sinclair.
Oh.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. But okay. When I heard that, I was like, that's still a really good name. Mark Sinclair.
Not as good as Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel's a great name.
That's an action star name.
Because he's like a video gamer. Do you think that was like his alternate like avatar before he started acting?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it could be. Or, you know, didn't he start like, didn't Spielberg see him in a short or something like that?
And he did it himself, I think. Right. It was like about him. Or
so
like,
he was, you know, the guy was talented, obviously.
Yeah.
I think he was a dancer, like a break dancer or something.
Yeah.
There's video of him for sure.
These Fast and Furious movies, just they fell into this.
Yeah.
They did not know this was going to become a billion-dollar franchise when they first did it. When they first did it, it was going to be some good-looking guys, some sexy women, and some fast cars.
It's point-breaking cars.
Right. And mm-hmm. then the formula worked beyond belief.
Yeah, definitely
and they
did.
They were like, let's just crank them out every year.
They stuck with it past shitty, and it came back to ironic cool,
right?
Which sustained it into premium cool.
Yeah, I mean, in comedy, I'm sure you would know, like a lot of times when something is not funny, but you keep harping on it, then it becomes funny again somehow.
Right.
Okay, Nitro. I had to ask about this whole I don't know fiasco
about nitrous.
Nitrous
oxide.
They all have it in the cars. There's even a scene in this movie where he releases a gas valve and then pushes in that like lighter thing in everybody's car, and then it explodes. And so I have several questions here, I guess. One, have you guys used this nitrous oxide? Is it safe to use? Should anyone have this? Why would you have it next to you?
I'm going to let Matt. You want to take it, Matt?
Yeah, I'll give you the basics. So nitrous oxide is what you call an accelerant, right?
Okay.
It allows, it creates a more oxygen-rich environment in your engine. Mm. More oxygen plus more fuel means more fire and more horsepower.
Okay.
So it's known as a power adder. You have to keep filling the stupid bottle. And if it's installed correctly in a drag racing car, it's reasonably safe to use.
Okay.
It is. People use it all the time. What you don't want to do is drill a hole into your intake, shove a nitrous thing in there, and put it on a button. The button visual is what is really not accurate about it.
It's always a button.
Most people, especially in a computer-controlled car, it's on a throttle position switch, so it flows as much or as little as is needed, dependent on your engine RPM and your throttle. So there would be like a master arm that would turn the system on, and then after that, it's just on
the pedal.
But the visual of the button, you know, and like a being like an instant boost, like
that's wrong.
It's hokey.
Well,
it's not entirely wrong, but it's definitely hokey.
Theoretically, so this look at an this is what an engine is basically. An engine is basically a pump, right? So you put air in, you put fuel in, you ignite it, and that moves the pistons, which move the crankshaft, which creates power.
Okay.
So if you have more air in, just like he said, and you add more fuel, you can get more power. So what you have is things like turbos, superchargers, nitrous. Basically, instead of the engine sucking air in, air is being pumped in. Right. So it's under pressure. So, yeah. So you have this big bottle. Right. And yeah, it's like you said, it's usually hooked up with your throttle. Like when you hit full throttle, then the nitrous kicks in and it's a temporary boost. It's not, you know, it's not enough to make you fly between buildings in Dubai. It's that last little boost of horsepower when you're in a drag race or something like that.
OK.
And but it looks much sexier to open the bottle, hit the switch, and suddenly the car just rockets. You know, if you watched Mad Max, same thing, you know, where Mad Max would do that in the chase scene when he would lift the red knob and the supercharger would kick in and then the car would just, you know, take off. Now, the great thing about the Mad Max movies, they're all real cars.
Right, yes.
They use all real, even in the last one, they started out with 130 cars, and by the end of filming had one because they literally destroyed every cars, vehicle yeah. you saw. But it was all real. Awesome. Like that's how he does it. But whereas with Fast and Furious, it's become more and more CGI.
Yeah.
You know, which I think they need to tell people that because these kids start believing that
in the
their
first
car
one, there's a lot of real cars. Oh, yeah. And my friend Craig Lieberman owned like five ones, of the cars.
Oh, cool.
In the early ones, there were cars. But then, like I said, when they started flying.
Yeah.
Okay, like this is a thing. All right, listen, kids. When you're backing your car out of a cargo jet that's taking off, okay, be sure that your speed matches the ground speed. When you hit the ground, you know what I mean? Like, no, you cannot back a car out of a cargo jet as it's taking off and then drive away. Don't try it.
Don't do that.
Don't do that at home.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
That's good advice. Yeah. This is an advice podcast, so that's very helpful.
What other sciencey things do you have on that sheet of yours?
Yeah. It's way too long. So
no, I'm just curious. It's upside down from here.
Right at the beginning of a race, there's mm-hmm. something he like, and only in Vin Diesel's car, he like, what's that called? You're like starting the tires. Yeah, he's like burning out. Oh. And then as soon as it starts, the front of his car launches into the air.
Mm. Right. That's called a wheelie.
Yeah, he's doing this wheelie. Why? How does that happen like right at the beginning?
So in a drag race, mm-hmm. right, at a drag strip with real drag cars.
Yeah.
You have these big, slick racing tires that are deflated to very low PSI, and they use this stuff called VHT, which is literally like liquid tar they spray on the ground. So you do a burnout, the smoke, in place.
Yep.
That heats up the tires, makes them very tacky.
Okay.
Then you'd roll up to the line, which is covered in this tarry stuff, so it's tacky on tacky.
Ooh.
And you launch your car, and it grips so hard that it torques the front wheels in the air.
Oh.
To do the stunt in the movie, they physically put weights on the back of the car
to
upset the weight distribution to make it do that.
There we go.
That's not entirely accurate, but it would be possible if it was on a track with the right surface.
Yeah, okay.
You got to have a ton of power, a ton of torque to wheelie a car because it's very heavy. On dragsters, like funny cars and stuff, they have what's called wheelie bars. So that they stick out the backs, two little wheels. So basically, when the car goes up, it keeps the car from flipping over. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was worried about that.
It would make so much power, you know, that it would just launch. So
wow.
That's, so it's not going to happen in a street race like that. It looks good. You see it with motorcycles all the time. Motorcycles, it's easy to wheelie because, again, the power to weight ratio is so much different.
Right. You can kind of lift it up.
You can also move your body weight to balance it away, which you
know.
I just thought it was the video, Lonzo, from like a couple of weeks ago of the Porsche Turbo at the drag strip that does a wheelie. It launches in four wheels and it does about a 50-foot wheelie. This is a 911. It's so fast. It was awesome.
I got to see it. Yeah, but I thought it was only with like hydraulics that you can hit a button and then
you can make it bounce.
No, that's a different thing. That's low rounding. They're driving as slow as possible when they're bouncing.
See, that's more my speed.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. That would be
low
great.
Low riders are awesome. We should do a low rider show.
Now, you want to talk about hot women hanging around cars.
Yeah.
That low rider world is just unreal.
Yeah.
And they have them.
They actually do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that import show, if you switch to cars with low riders, the people would make more sense.
Right. Okay. That clicks with me in a much better way. Okay. So there's a main part of this movie, a plot point, is nitro meth. He says that there's only one guy in LA that sells nitro meth.
Yeah.
And he knows it because there's like a yellow substance on the road and he like...
Well, it's a fuel. Nitro methane is a fuel that's basically explosive, which is why you don't put it in your car.
Okay. Yeah.
But there are, again, drag racers and race cars that are made to run on that fuel.
Oh.
So what he's saying is that residue of the fuel tells him that, you know, there's one guy who has a car that runs on this, and this is how we know it's the guy.
If you have a car that looks even remotely like a car, like not a dragster, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a car that's driven on the street.
Yeah.
And it's running on nitro meth, you have a real problem. Like, because there's so many levels of fuel between regular gas station 87 octane and night. There's about 7 or 8 levels of race gas.
Okay.
And you're into the thousands of horsepower if you need nitro methane.
Yeah.
When he says looks like a car, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but dragsters, it's just a plastic body put on the frame. It's a plastic body that looks like a Dodge Charger or a Camaro or something like that, but that's all it is. It's a fiberglass, or well, it used to be fiberglass, now they're plastic. It's not a real car body on there. So that's what he's talking about.
I think
about.
In the movie it's like a Torino or something, and the idea that a Ford Torino is running nitromethane is insane.
I was so confused about it because, A, I love the name nitrometh. That sounds just badass. Sounds really cool, right?
Yeah.
And then there was also some hate on hybrids. You know, like they mentioned, it's like, oh, dude, he might own a hybrid, and Paul Walker's like, no chance. And so I don't know. I want a hybrid. I think that, you know, it's good.
There's some cool hybrids, but at the time this film came out, there weren't.
Okay.
The cool hybrids.
Yeah, let's
are the $1 million supercars where the engine makes 600 horsepower and then the electric motors add 400 more.
Yeah,
Cool hybrids are not Priuses that get 72 miles a gallon. That's
not cool.
No, cool hybrids are supercars because like Formula One race cars are hybrids, right? It's a V6 motor with an electric motor added for power. And to get race cars are, let's test this technology before we put it on the street.
Right.
Like that's what that's part of what car racing is about. So you have these hybrid supercars, like Matt was talking about, McLaren, Porsche, Ferrari, they're making them. And that's what they use the hybrid for additional horsepower above and beyond what the gas-powered engine is making.
Okay. What you can do with the hybrid system is you can have a car that's got the gas engine powering the rear wheels, and then you have electric motors in the front wheels, which can give you an all-wheel drive system, but where the front wheels aren't mechanically connected, which means you can program them to do anything.
Oh.
Which, there's a little nerdy for you, but like let's say you're turning into a corner. You could have it break your inside wheel and over-accelerate your outside wheel to make you turn sharper.
Okay.
And you can just program that in.
Damn.
So like that's what a cool hybrid does.
That is a cool hybrid.
Probably not what he's talking about.
No. They were talking about having a Prius.
This movie was like 05, right?
09.
09? Yeah, not any good hybrids yet. It was like four more years before you got good hybrids.
A Tesla, a good hybrid.
Tesla's fully electric.
Okay. Yeah. Cool electric car, though.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Goes fast. According to what
you're
saying.
Cool appliance. Porsche Taycan. Cool electric car.
Yeah.
There's a quote. Somebody says, muscle beats import every time.
Right.
It was also kind of a schmuck character that said this.
It usually is.
Okay.
So muscle cars are American cars, mainly from the 60s, where the way they made horsepower, make the engine bigger. They were big cubic inch engines, big V8s, and there are people who believe in muscle, and they like old hot rods, and they build those up. And then imports are the Japanese cars, where the technology, where you're tuning it with your lap. That's why you see them tune it with their laptop, because they can adjust fuel mapping and this and that and the other. So that's kind of the battle, right? The old school muscle guys who grew up with those cars, who believe in those cars, and then the tuner guys are the younger people who believe, my technology will beat your cubic inches.
Yeah.
Okay. Where do you guys fall?
I think I don't even get in that fight. I think it's a stupid fight.
What do you want? What do you like?
Yeah.
You know, I've got a friend. Well, you know Chris Titus.
Yes.
You know? Titus is a car guy. He has some of the most beautiful old hot rods he builds. He's into muscle. He also drives a Tesla as his day-to-day driver. But we used to have this argument, and I say, like, Titus, I get it, but the golden age of cars is now, because at that time I had a CTSV. I was like, I have a Cadillac with 550 horsepower that also has heated seats. Like, you know, when they put 500 horsepower in a 69 Camaro, not only didn't it have heated seats, it couldn't turn. It went straight.
It also wasn't watertight.
Right. If you tried to turn at a high speed, well, now you die.
Yeah.
And so the technology has made everything better and safer, but there is something to be said for just brute horsepower, like an old car that has a brutal engine that just, you know, but you have to know how to drive. Kevin Hart's crash was a case of somebody driving a high horsepower car, an older car that was built to be a high horsepower car, and the guy didn't know how to drive it.
Yeah, I know what you're doing.
I like all different kind of stuff. I mean, not everybody can own multiple vehicles, but I can, and so I have different cars that excite me for different reasons. And if you're not actually entered in a race with prizes, I don't really care if your car does the quarter mile a second faster than my car if I like my car. Like, I just don't.
Except for next Thursday when you guys race. Yeah.
And I've never had room or money, but definitely not room to collect cars. So I just go through them. Like, I'll drive something for a year and a half. Now I'm bored. I want to drive something else. Yeah. And a lot of times it will be something completely different. Like, I literally went from driving a Hummer to a Mini Cooper.
Did you make that actual trade?
Yes.
I made that actual trade. Yeah. I went H1 to Mini Cooper in 2006. I went H2.
Wow.
And yeah, because the Mini that is salesman such framed a fun,
the photo of the trade.
I have a picture of me with both of them.
The
stand between, and I'm like, I'm a true Gemini.
Yeah,
these are, you know, but the Mini came out and it was like, man, this is like driving a go-kart.
You're such in the Italian job when you drive
little
that joint.
Car. Yeah. And the engineering people like, how do you fit in it? And it's like, I'd have people sit in it and they couldn't touch the pedals.
Yeah.
The seat goes back so far. Like, it is remarkable engineering how much room they have in that little car. And it's so much fun to
drive. You know what I just drove, Alonzo, last week? I went to Buellton up north.
I know Buellton.
And I drove a classic Mini. Like, oh, the old
I've
one.
I still haven't driven one of those.
You have to drive this one. Yeah. Because this one has a supercharged V6 in the back.
Whoa.
And it weighs 2,000 pounds and makes 500 horsepower. It's psycho death machine.
The other
fantastic
thing guys are doing is they're putting motorcycle engines
yep
in them.
Yep.
Yes, yeah, they are.
Motorcycle engine in a little car is a wonderful thing.
Oh.
Because motorcycle engines rev really high.
Okay.
And usually you're also using the motorcycle transmission, which is sequential. So a high revving engine with a sequential transmission in a little car feels like a Formula One car. You know, it's crazy.
Okay.
It's awesome.
I got to try. You guys are really getting me into this. I've never been in before, and now I really
want. Let's take you to the dealership right now. Let's get it going.
Let's go.
Now, you know what you should do that would be really fun for you? Just south of the airport, they have the Porsche Experience.
The Burbank Airport?
LAX.
Okay.
And it costs a little, like $500.
Okay.
And you can get out there with someone who knows how to drive, and you'll do laps in a Porsche, and then they'll let you drive it.
Wow.
And you get to experience what a high-performance car is like in a safe, controlled place. There's also a place in Vegas called Speed Vegas, the same thing. And, you know, again, it costs some money. It costs a few $100. It's like the adult playground, right? So I did a thing there called the Italian job where I got to do like 10 laps, 5 laps in a Ferrari, 5 laps in a Lamborghini.
Whoa.
And it was a blast. Yeah. It was fun. But this is a way to experience it. You don't have to buy the car. You don't have to deal with all of that. You just want to see, you know, some people like they've never done 100 miles an hour in a car.
Right.
And this is a controlled atmosphere where you could safely do 100, 120 miles an hour in a car just to see what it feels like to do, you know, which is much safer than doing it on the 405.
And even the entry-level Porsches today are stupid fast.
Yeah.
And, like, they have cool programs. And my friend Jen runs this place. It's great. They have, like, you could do a basic session or you can do, like, stick versus automatic, rear-wheel drive versus all-wheel drive, turbo versus non-turbo. Like, they have different cool, like, sampler kind of programs for you to get a variety of experiences.
I am down. That sounds super fun.
I can set it up to hook you up.
I would absolutely love that. And I think this is probably the best time to tell you, since we are wrapping up, that I don't know how to drive the stick shift.
That's okay.
They
can probably teach you.
A ton of people don't now, you know.
Right.
And there's another fight that goes on now, stick shift versus dual clutch transmission.
See,
the dual clutch transmission, it basically the clutch is controlled by a computer and it's like automatic. And people are like, oh, it's not real drive. It's like, well, the fastest cars in the world all use it, so there must be something to it.
Okay, that's a good argument. I like that. I'll say that from now on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, but there's people who are real enthusiasts who would like manufacturers to continue making stick shift cars, even though there is less and less of a business case to do so every year.
Sure.
And it's the opposite. It used to be that the stick was the standard, and then you paid a little more to get an automatic. Now, if you want a stick, you're special ordering it. Wow. Porsche charges more if you want a stick.
And the reason
now
is because if you're a manufacturer, if one out of 300 cars you sell has this manual transmission. As a manufacturer, it's a pain in the ass to build that one car
right.
for that person who insists on the manual transmission. And then the other thing, and this is where people's heads, like this is where fantasy versus reality, right? Well, I'm faster in a stick. And then like, if you're honest with yourself and you do, like Matt said, go drive both, like, no, you're not.
You're not.
like
you might have more fun in a stick if you enjoy driving stick, but you ain't faster.
The racers literally say, like, especially with Porsche, because Porsche is so good at figuring out when the car should shift and the control. They're like, no, put it in drive and don't touch it.
Yeah, they set the Nürburgring records in automatic
mode. Yeah, they're like, the car is smarter than you.
Okay, cool. So I don't feel bad about
myself out of pride, but if I actually wanted to set a lap time that mattered, I would just put the stupid thing in automatic.
Wow. And me, I leave it in drive. My car is much smarter than me, so it's cool. I'm cool with
that. I don't think all cars are smarter than me. I think some very high-end cars are smarter than me, but some of them...
I assume all cars are smarter than me, for sure.
Well, they probably are.
Yeah, big time.
This is, you know.
Boys, I can't thank you enough for being on the program. Is there something you'd like to promote? Obviously, you each have the great podcasts, but anything else you guys want to plug, please feel free.
AlonzoBowden.com. Come see me do stand-up, and I won't talk at all about cars. We'll talk about anything else.
You talk about cars sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. I talk about driving.
But relatable and, shit, not fucking nitrous oxide.
Driving and traffic and I'm not a fan of the Prius. Anyone who's seen my stand-up is...
It's a lot of Prius-based material.
They know I'm not... No, I'm not a fan of the Prius or the Tesla. I always say Tesla drivers are just Prius drivers that made it.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you haven't seen Alonzo, please get off your butt and do so.
Thank you.
Unbelievable.
I'll plug the Smoking Tire podcast, the Smoking Tire YouTube series, and you can just find all that at thesmokingtire.com. And if you're in Los Angeles and you like this because you're collecting cars or you want to be a car collector, I have a collector car storage facility. It's called Westside Collector Car Storage in Playa Vista, and you can come see us or hit us up.
I might have been there before. I'm trying to think if it was there. There was like a studio at a car collection place, and I think that was the name of it.
I don't think so, because we're going to be open in about 2 weeks. I've built the building. But come see us anyway. That's okay. I'm sure there's another studio
somewhere.
I'll
come by.
But come see us at Westside Collector Car Store.
If you're listening to this, go have fun with a car.
Yeah.
Go to a high-performance driving school.
That's nice.
That's probably the safest way to do it. And all the car manufacturers, if you go to a Porsche website, Mercedes website, BMW website, they'll show you. BMW has one. I did one. They did it at Santa Ana Racetrack in the parking lot. They set up cones, and they teach you how to drive. And it's really fun. And, you know, in the old days, and Matt knows this, in the old days, you learned by risking your life. you were an idiot. Like, I remember my first motorcycle, they were like, here's a clutch, here's a throttle, this is how you shift. Good luck.
Bye.
And if you make it home, you should be okay.
Yeah.
But now they have so many classes and controlled environments where you get to enjoy. These are adult toys, but you get to enjoy them under the right circumstances where you won't kill yourself.
And the Motorcycle Safety Foundation, which has MSF classes teaches. All over the country, and they have bikes. And so you can take an MSF class that's like a weekend long that literally ends with you having a license.
Wow. Yeah,
you show up, they tell you bring a heavy jacket, wear jeans and boots. They'll provide you a helmet, gloves, a small, non-intimidating bike to teach you how to ride. Yeah, and you get everything, and then you just go to DMV with the proof from this. And they're like, okay,
we'll get your license.
Man,
yeah.
I'm definitely going to take you up on it, partake, and I'll let all these listeners know how I fare if I fall, and I'm sure it'll be super fun.
And remember, no more stories about being on the back of your friend's bike.
Yeah. No. I'm done with that.
Thank you.
My next story is going to be me on the bike for
sure. There you go.
Okay. Thank you, guys. See you later. Bye.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Emily Feld. Our engineer is Jeremy Schmidt.
And the executive is Brett Kushner.
Bad Science is edited by Lucas Bollinger, and our social media is managed by Blue Whale Media. Shout out to EJ and Kate. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. Or feel free to send us an email, badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Let us know what you think about the show, any movies we should do in the future. And of course, leave us an iTunes review. That lets other people hear about the show. And I'll see you all next week. Bye.